You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The words of wisdom this morning come from the fourth chapter of Luke, verses 16 to 19, and also the fifth chapter of Galatians, verse 1. You can follow along on the screen or in your bulletin. When he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And now in Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, "For freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Let me just say, I was ordained in 1970 in the Presbyterian Church. By the middle 70s, the issue of sexuality was on the table in our church. I lived with that my whole parish ministry journey. I did my own sort of reflecting, studying, thinking, talking to gay and lesbian persons in the late 70s, early 80s, and formed my own view and became an advocate for change in the Presbyterian Church. It didn't happen until 2013 and 2014. Little did I know then that in 2011, our oldest would come out to us as a transgender person. So I was prepared theologically, intellectually, not prepared emotionally, to deal with the realities that presented. But we've been on that journey, and I celebrate who my daughter is becoming. Something there is deep inside of each of us that calls us to freedom. A still small voice whispers, "I am a free person. I may not always act free. Some things at times control me in ways that I wish were different. But in my heart of hearts, I really believe I am free to make my own choices." You may remember Sammy Davis Jr. singing, "Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I gotta be me. I got to be me. What else can I be but what I am? I can't be right for someone else if I'm not right for me. I gotta be free. I gotta be free. Daring to try to do it or die, I gotta be me." When freedom is taken away, when I'm controlled by someone else against my will, I react and I do what I need to do to regain my freedom. Now, our nation was founded on a quest for freedom. They came from England, they came from the Netherlands, they came seeking safety from European oppressors. They came looking for new markets, perhaps a new passageway to India. They came wanting to create a new paradise based on their understanding of the New Testament. Plymouth Colony was built around the classic safeguards of English liberty, which included trial by jury, no taxation without representation, free elections, life, liberty, and property, except when prohibited by the process of law. As the colonies grew and developed, it became more and more difficult to submit their well-being to the tyranny of English rule. The call to freedom impelled them to take a firm stand. As James Otis said, "Where liberty is, there is my country." England's coercive, intolerable acts were challenged. A Declaration of Independence was written, adopted the evening of July 4th, 1776, and read from the balcony of Independence Hall in Boston. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that are among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Give me liberty or give me death. It was not only the statement of Patrick Henry, it resonated with many, though certainly not all, of those living in the New England colonies in the late 18th century. These revolutionary words, this revolutionary declaration, led to a revolutionary war and ultimately to the liberation that was desired. A Bill of Rights gave fundamental freedoms to the citizens of this new nation. Something there is deep inside of each of us that calls us to freedom. Sadly, freedom for many did not mean freedom for all. Our history as Americans contains chapters when those with power denied freedom to those with less power. The one who was once oppressed became an oppressor, often justifying actions with religious beliefs. The Puritans, arriving in the early 1600s, seeking to build that new paradise that they envisioned, were not prepared to deal with the indigenous peoples encountered in the new land. They were suspicious of difference and perceived that Native Americans, as uncivilized heathen or pagan, were outside of the covenant of God. So their call was to destroy evil and to fulfill God's purpose as they understood it. In 1636, at the Mystic River in Connecticut, a Puritan militia massacred more than 400 Pequot Indians, including women and children, and burned their village to the ground. Governor William Bradford, a leading separatist, regarded the massacre as an occasion for thanksgiving and said, "It was a fearful sight to them thus frying in the fire, but the victory seemed a sweet sacrifice. And they gave the prayers thereof to God, who had wrought so wonderfully for them, thus to enclose their enemies in their hands." Challenging the natives to leave their uncivilized and pagan ways, the Puritans instructed them in new European Christian ways. In time, a small number of natives became praying Indians, and some whole villages were labeled praying villages. These praying towns isolated inhabitants from non-Christian Indians, pressuring the town's natives to adopt Puritan culture. Segregated communities were developed, called reservations, chartered to fulfill the Puritan dream of paradise. One scholar notes that the praying towns were the beginning of the boarding school system. Indian resistance increased. Treaties were broken on both sides, leading to violence and murder and ultimately to war. And by the time it was over, nearly half of New England's 95 settlements were gone. Many burned to the ground. Approximately 17% of the English population was dead, and nearly 50% of the native population had perished from disease, starvation, and warfare. Many of you who have visited the Heard Museum know the tragic story of the boarding schools, still in operation in some localities until the 1990s. Native American children were forcibly separated from their families and sent to government or church-run schools. The goal was to civilize and Americanize them. Personal Native items were taken from them, including clothing and jewelry. Their hair was cut, and they were not allowed to speak Native languages. John Brown Jr., a Navajo who served in World War II as a code talker, using his native language for tactical communications that the Japanese could not decode, recounted his boarding school experience in an interview. "They tell us not to speak in Navajo language, and then me and my cousin, we get together and we talk in Indian. We always hush when we see a teacher or faculty coming. And then we always laughed and said, I think they're trying to make little white boys out of us." Slavery is another sad story of freedom taken from inhabitants of our land. It too was justified with biblical quotations. A mother unleashes a piercing scream as her baby is ripped from her arms during a slave auction. Parents lived with the constant fear that they or their children might be sold away. Night and day you could hear men and women screaming, "Ma, Pa, sister or brother, taken away without any warning." People was always dying from a broken heart, recalled one person. Some of these words just sound tragically repeating themselves these days, don't they? We fought a horrible national civil war, resulting in over 500,000 deaths. And afterwards, many black parents put ads in newspapers hoping that a child would see it and that they might be reunited as a family. For some, that never happened. Jews built their nation and religion around the narrative of liberation from slavery in Egypt. At every Passover Seder meal, these words are sung. "How is this night different from all other nights? We were once slaves in Egypt, but God redeemed us, bringing us out from the land to freedom." A traditional view holds that God, from a distance, looks out on the oppression of the Jewish people and hears their cry. God intervenes on their behalf by sending plagues, by hardening Pharaoh's heart, and by calling Moses from his escape into the desert to come and lead the people out. God sends the angel of death, parts the Red Sea, and closes the waters in on the pursuing Egyptian army. It is an interventionist view of God that sees God taking control of creation and people and accomplishing for them what they cannot accomplish on their own and fulfilling God's vision. Rabbi Bradley Artson, however, offers a different take on the story. It is human beings, not God, who have caused Israel's enslavement. And it is human beings who must discern new possibilities, have courage, and take risks that can lead to their liberation. God hears the cry of the people and is moved with compassion. But rather than intervening coercively, God seeks to persuade by many means, luring and calling people to take action in their own freedom, for their own freedom. Jesus is one who hears and listens and responds to that persuading call of the Spirit. A sense of personal mission takes shape in him as he reflects on the challenging words of the prophet Isaiah and his particular moment in time and the realities of that time. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. For Jesus, freedom means following the call of God in the context of one's day. He challenges the self-righteous religious to put love above law. He confronts disciples who see children as in the way, inviting them instead to see a child's trusting nature as a model of faith. He advises a rich man to share his wealth with the poor and frees an adulterous woman by not condemning her, but inviting her to begin a new life. Freedom for Jesus was a continuous choice leading to ongoing life transformation. Wherever the Spirit of God is, writes Paul, there is freedom. God invites us to choose life, even when that means letting go of something lesser in order to gain something far greater. It has been said that freedom isn't free. For Jesus, freedom and love meant enduring a Roman cross. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that when Christ calls a person, he bids that one to come and die. And Martin Luther King is quoted, "Freedom is never given voluntarily by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed." James Cone was a black liberation theologian and writes about the cost many blacks paid in his book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree. "You can't truly understand the cross," he writes, "until you also understand the lynching tree." You could reflect the rest of the day on that statement. It is one thing to think about the cross as a theological concept or as a magical formula to be believed in. Quite another to connect Calvary with the lynching tree in the experience of many Americans. Blacks often speak of the black Christ, God incarnate among them as a black man, suffering with them, crying for freedom. The lynching tree was the most horrifying symbol for blacks of white supremacy and the usurpation of freedom. It was a shameful, painful way to die. The fear of lynching was so deep and widespread that most blacks were too scared to even talk about it publicly. It was horrific in all of its forms: hanging, burning, beating, dragging, shooting, as well as torture, mutilation, castration. Sometimes an ad was put in the paper notifying the public of a lynching to take place at a certain time and place. 1,000 would turn out, parents with children, picnic baskets and blankets to enjoy the afternoon lynching. Most black artists were not church-going Christians. They sung and played their response through the blues. The great jazz and blues singer Billie Holiday sang her version of "Strange Fruit" as her personal protest. It has been called a declaration of war and one of the songs that changed the world. Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black body swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the trees to drop. Here is a strange and bitter crop. A white Jewish schoolteacher exercised his freedom writing these lyrics after witnessing a lynching in Marion, Indiana. And he wrote them, he said, because I hate lynching, I hate injustice, and I hate the people who perpetuate it. Nellie Burroughs, a deeply committed Christian, urged blacks to resist the temptation of spiritual passivity, as if God would liberate them without their own participation. Speaking in 1933 on the theme, "What Must the Negro Do to Be Saved?" she said, "Don't wait for deliverers. There are no deliverers. The Negro must serve notice to the world that he is ready to die for justice. We are a race on the continent that can work out its own salvation. Work as if it all depends upon you. Pray as if it all depends on God." Cohn challenges the passive way the cross is often viewed as if it was God's interventionist plan necessitated by human sin. "I find nothing redemptive about suffering itself. The gospel is a story about God's presence in Jesus' solidarity with the oppressed, which led to his death on the cross. A symbol of death and defeat, God turned it into a sign of liberation and new life. But we cannot find liberating joy in the cross by spiritualizing it, by taking away its message of justice in the midst of powerlessness, suffering, and death." This weekend, as Pride Month comes to a close, we remember Stonewall, June 28, 1969. At a gay bar in Manhattan, patrons resisted when the police arrived to harass them. We remember Stonewall today because it began a movement that has brought affirmation, inclusion, and greater freedom to LGBTQ persons. And today, miracle of miracles, in that same police force, there are gay and lesbian officers there to make sure the Stonewall celebration takes place without any issues. This week I read that the Evangelical Covenant Church has dismissed First Covenant Church of Minneapolis and defrocked its minister, Dan Collison, because of the congregation's stand on gay marriage and disagreement with the national church's position. Collison said that his church should have the freedom to disagree with the denomination's take on same-sex marriage. And then there's Megan Rapinoe, a self-possessed, a professed lesbian, and the leading scorer on the U.S. women's soccer team. She scored the winning 2 goals in the U.S.'s defeat of France yesterday or the day before. She's created a lot of controversy because alone with football player Colin Kaepernick, she has refused to stand for the national anthem. And more recently, she has said that if the U.S. team wins the world championship, she will not be joining others to attend a gathering at the White House in protest to the president's actions regarding LGBTQ persons. Now, you may or may not agree with the viewpoints of these people, but I'm sure we would all agree that oppression must be challenged. We can't sit idly by if freedom is to be won and maintained. There is something deep inside each of us that says, "I gotta be free and I gotta be me." So as we join with others this week to celebrate our national independence, let us be mindful of that call to freedom that lies in the depths of every person. And knowing that we must not take it for granted, may we listen to the call of our own hearts as we witness freedom challenged in our own time and place by oppressive people and powers in their desire to control others. And then resisting passivity, let us collaborate with others to effect liberating changes in our world so that we join with Jesus in bringing good news to the poor, release to captives, recovery of sight to the blind, and freedom to all who are oppressed. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.